to us and raise our consciousness this day to that which is taking place around us even today, maybe even in our own hearts as well. And I ask that you would empower this message with your Spirit to speak to each of us in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, it's that season, and as that season starts, you see all kinds of Christmas movies that are on TV and stuff, and one of those is Home Alone and Home Alone 2. How many of you have seen that movie, those movies? Okay, everybody saw that. Well, it's the title for the message today. I know this. The premise for that story is that there are two brothers and their combined families of 11 kids are about to go to Europe at Christmas time, and in the confusion of getting ready to go, they leave one of the children, a boy who's 9 years old, at home alone while the rest of the family goes to Europe. Now, when this came out about 25 years ago or so, this kid ends up defending the house from burglars. And it always reminds me of my brother and myself. My brother has 5 kids, and I have 4. And back 25 years ago, they were probably similar in age to these two families. So when I was watching the movie back then, I says, well, this is just kind of like us. Luckily, over the years, we have never left any of our children behind. So that was good to know. Anyway. But it was kind of a reflection of my family and my brother, and we used to travel together for vacation. But I think about that. The title of the movie, Home Alone. How many people are left home alone? We're not just kids. Well, there's one right here. Yeah. Not just kids who are inadvertently left behind like in the movie, but people who are just home alone. Latchkey kids who come home from school without parents and they're home alone. Shut-ins who spend days and months, even years, with a few visitors but are essentially home alone. The husband and wife who sit side by side on the couch but because of lost love and broken promises and broken relationship and fellowship, they're in the presence of each other, but they're basically home alone. The businessman who is going through tremendous struggle and turmoil at work with no one to understand him sits at the kitchen table with wife and kids and in their presence, but he is basically home alone. The mother who sends kids off to school or college and sits at home alone. The young mother who has no one to talk to but kids and has no adult fellowship in the household and is essentially home alone with kids. The single parent trying to make ends meet and raise kids and who crashes on the couch with the kids asleep and finally is home alone. The teenager whose parents miss the point, whose parents don't understand, whose friends don't understand the struggles of identity with the noises of family around him or her, but home alone. The woman who is widowed and fights the battles in life by herself. She sits there at night in the darkness of her own soul and is home alone. The man who sits by the dying wife in the hospital and when he goes home at night, he's home alone with nothing but the haunting agony of death standing at the door. The cancer patient who lies on his deathbed in the hospital knowing the reality of what is happening, realizing that he is going home alone. There's a lot of power and pain and haunting in the title they chose for that cute movie, Home Alone. Today, as we begin the holiday season, this being the first Sunday in Advent, I want to raise your consciousness to what goes on around us all the time and in us some of the time as well in terms of our own lives. I want you to think about this. I want you to be awake. you know, I want you to live what I do in terms of ministry sometimes in the month of December. Some of us will be struggling with problems and circumstances and job situations and host of other things. Though we may live our lives with others, we go home alone with those things in our hearts. So I want to give you a message of pictures, because a lot of times Christmas is about pictures. Pictures of life. And I want to give both good and bad. Charles Dickens is well known for his story about Scrooge. And by the way, Scrooge was home alone when Marley's ghost showed up, and the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Maybe part of what I'm doing today is playing the part of Marley's ghost up here for some of us. Charles Dickens also wrote another book called A Tale of Two Cities, and that book begins with these words. And these words are a picture of our world. Your life and my life and everybody around us are portrayed in these very words that I'm about to read to you. Listen to them. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. And those words apply to us. And they intensify during the Christmas season. And I know this because I deal with people and I take tours in people's lives. The Christmas season is the best of times, and yet it is the worst of times. It is the time of belief and faith, and it is the time of supreme doubt. It is the season of light, and it is the season of darkness. It is the spring of hope, but for many, it is the winter of despair. Some have everything before them, some have nothing before them. It is a season of mixed emotions. This is the season of the Christ child, a season of light and love and giving. It is the time when we celebrate Jesus coming into the world to save us from ourselves, our sin, and our condition, in a sense, being home alone, separated from others and God. It's the time of glory and wonder, of awe of God's love for us, and yet it is a time of darkness as we all stand at our windows looking out at the star that proclaims the Savior's birth. But we can stand there in the darkness of our homes alone looking out. Jesus came to be the light shining in our darkness and to come to our homes this Christmas so that we won't be home alone. But this is a time also of darkness and despair, and I deal with it on a regular basis. It's a time of worry and conflict, anxiety and sadness, and also death. This is the time of the year that my job seems to pick up, because this is when all the sins of the years come home to roost as well. This is the season to be jolly, but it is also the season when families fight with a vengeance. This is a time of anxiety over money and kids. This is the season of despair and depression, and the time when suicide is most often the terrible answer. This is the season when all hell breaks loose in people's lives and in their families. And behind all this darkness lies the creeping death that is quiet, the darkness of loneliness, which is really what I want to raise up to you today. This is the season when people are most lonely, over lost love, lost friendships, lost years, lost hopes, and this lostness is with them as they sit there home alone. And the picture is true. These are the best of times, and these are the worst of times. A few more pictures, because this is really a message about pictures. Roy Orbison sang a song. Some of you are old enough to remember this guy. He sang a song, Only the Lonely, and you probably have heard it. And then there was a movie starring John Candy out called Only the Lonely. And in the song and the movie, there was this struggle of people, lovers, trying to get together. They exemplify our tremendous need to have someone to share life with. Pictures of people like you and me seeking to share life. Let me point a few more pictures of loneliness from the description of people who have lived there. Home alone. One man described loneliness as a wall that he built around himself. Part of that wall was carefully constructed, like concrete reinforced with steel. It was a picture of his loneliness that was deliberate and planned. Other parts of the wall, however, were constructed frantically with scrap lumber and barbed wire and other odds and ends, which were thrown together quickly when someone was getting too close. Another person described his loneliness like being in a cave. When other people approached, he would hasten into his cave. His struggle was to try and leave the cave. It reminds me of the stories of Elijah and Gideon in the Bible. Elijah, after having a great victory, was threatened by the queen Jezebel, and he fell into a blue funk, and he hid in a cave alone. Gideon was found by God in a cave, threshing meal in a wine press because of his fear of the Midianites, and he was alone. Another person feels that he's always wearing a suit of armor, and only when he's thus protected does he dare to walk among people and he mingles with them, but he's really not with them because he's covered up. His desire in life is to remove his armor, but he can't seem to do it. Another person described himself as a kind of porcupine in a world of porcupines. He and everybody else are protected by these barbs of hostility, so that if he really wanted to get close to people, he couldn't anyway, because either he would be barbed by them or they would barb him and wound him. Pictures of loneliness. These are descriptions that people have said about themselves. See if you can see these pictures in your mind like pictures in an out gallery. The first one is entitled Frightened Loneliness. And in it, a woman is crouching in fear in the living room of her home. Under it are the words, if anyone gets too close to me, I will be swallowed up and destroyed. I feel inadequate to be with people. Next to that picture in the gallery is Guilty Loneliness. And in it is a man or a woman. And you picture that person with blood on their hands, and under the fingernails, and under the picture are these words, if you really knew me, you would turn away from me. The third picture in the gallery of loneliness is Despairing Loneliness, and it is a man or a woman. No, it might even be a child. And it depends on who looks at it, and it shifts and it changes shape. And underneath the picture, though, are the words that are always the same. No matter how hard I try, I will never succeed. I'll never be able to be loved or to love. And the fourth and fifth pictures in this gallery are definitely men. The fourth picture is entitled Proud Loneliness. A strong personality stands across the room with many items of furniture between you and this person. And on the items of furniture are words that are written: smug, insolent, haughty, self-important, vain, cocky, pushy. Under the picture are the words, you have to make the first move and come to me. Over the picture are the words, stupidity and sin will get you into trouble and be alone, but pride will keep you there. The fifth picture is entitled Angry Loneliness. And in it is a man who is bleeding and hurt in many places, and he's holding a smoking pistol in his hand. And underneath the picture are the words, I have been so hurt by my life, in my life and this world, that anybody that comes near to me will get what's coming to them. And all of these pictures are in a gallery of art known as Home Alone. Another picture comes from a song by the Beatles entitled Eleanor Rigby. It has a haunting sound that reflects a truly epidemic condition in our society, in our lives today. But the words, oh, the words, they are such a picture of two people among a world of people.
Picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father McKenzie, writing the words to a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, donning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Look at all the lonely people. Look at all the lonely people. Eleanor Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father McKenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
The accuracy of a prophet, the Beatles defined the condition of many people. The loneliness they described in Eleanor Rigby and the priest, Father McKenzie, is really no different than that which has existed throughout history. So let's let God in his word paint one more picture for us, and then let's look at some solutions for being home alone. Read with me Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. Here we go. Again, I saw the vanity under the sun, a person who has no one, either son or brother, and yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business. And this picture is a gallery entitled Loneliness of the Top Dog. Picture a man in an expensive suit standing behind an elegant desk at home looking out a window. And this is a man who has arrived, who has climbed to the top of his personal pyramid in business. And he realizes there isn't much room at the top. In fact, there's only room for one. And so the one at the top finds himself without a friend, not even family. And so the wisdom of Ecclesiastes speaks to all of us. Let's read verses 9 to 12. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they are warm. But how can one be warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Now there's wisdom here. Now, it is not my intention to answer all questions or solve all problems concerning loneliness and being alone. In the church, we often hear a simplistic answer: if God is with us, then all our problems are solved and we are no longer lonely. Therefore, it just follows that if you are lonely, it's your own fault. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's just too simplistic. Look at the opening words here. Two are better than one. Some people interpret that we are better off married, or that this writer is only speaking of married people. Well, that's just not true. Marriage isn't even mentioned here. It says that two are better than one, and it says it actually in the four different contexts of life here: work, burdens, companionship, and conflict. Two are better than one when it comes to doing a work. Working by yourself is lonely. Doing a work with no one pulling with you is hard work. We gain perspective and objectivity and courage in threatening situations and shared goals when somebody joins us in a work, a life work. Two are better than one when it comes to times of weakness. And you need to listen to this. In times of personal failure, stumbling, when we fall on our faces, when we get into trouble, we need somebody to pick us up, to bail us out. Somebody who will not walk away, but stoops down to lift us up. The writer also says, "Woe to him who is alone." And it is implied that if you are alone and fall, it's tough to get up. Two are better than one when it comes to companionship when vulnerable. It says two are better than one because two can keep warm when they lie down. Put aside the marriage image here. Let's not limit this to two bedtime warmth here. The fact of the matter is, you and I can't get warm if everything and everyone around us is cold. When we are vulnerable or weak or unguarded or exposed, we need someone to hold us and keep us from going cold. When the world is hostile around us, it's good to have a friend to hold us and warm our hearts by their fire. Two are better than one in a fight as well. We all have a threefold battle that we fight in this world. We battle ourselves, we battle our sinful natures, our own lack of wisdom and understanding, our own self-centeredness. We have a battle in that. But we also battle the world around us because the world is not for us at all. Thirdly, we battle Satan, who wants to keep us from Jesus and destroy us. A friend can help us and join us in these battles of life. They actually help us and fight with us because they are in those battles of life as well in themselves. Now, this wisdom from Ecclesiastes is really human wisdom. It just makes sense that two are better than one. And if that is the case, then it is wisdom to have a friend. Friendship helps us to keep from staying home alone in this life of ours that we live each day. Now, I need to get hard on somebody here, I expect, but I won't call your name. So if the shoe fits, wear it. There are three whines that come from lonely people. And some of these people blame others for their loneliness. The first cry or whine is this: why don't people love me and help me out of my problems? Well, let me tell you something. Friendship doesn't just happen automatically. They have to be grown. I have never heard of a rent-a-friend business. Let me say this. If you want a friend, make a friend. Be a friend. The second cry or whine is this: if only others realized how difficult things are for me. Well, the truth is, self-pity is one attention getter that wears out another's attention the quickest. Furthermore, feeling sorry for yourself won't get you out of it. Pity parties aren't wrong, and we need them occasionally, but don't live there. It is self-defeating. And the third whine or cry is this: nobody really cares. I'm all alone in this. Well, that very easily may be true. You may be all alone in this, whatever this is. But sometimes there are friends. And if you are just open to them and with them, who will stand with us, even though you know and they know as well that you have to do it alone, but they will stand with you. They stand with us even when we are out there all alone. Everybody needs a cheerleader now and then. But if you don't tell them, don't criticize them for not responding. Ultimately, though, God is with us in our loneliness. He also knows what it is to be alone. Jesus was alone in the wilderness. Jesus was alone in the Garden of Gethsemane. Finally, Jesus was alone when he picked up his cross and was nailed to it. He felt the power of being alone when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me?" I'm so glad he asked the question when he was so alone on that cross. It tells me that when I'm alone and my soul screams, my God, why have you left me all alone in this?" that I'm not really alone at all. The picture of Jesus on the cross asking that desperate question is the ultimate picture of being alone. And yet we know that he was not left alone except for that time of dying in order to make sure that we don't die alone, or for that matter, live alone. I want to raise your consciousness to this stuff. This season, if you are home alone, let me invite you to see one more picture for those who are alone sitting behind the closed door of their lives. Read with me Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him, and he with me." This season, if you are one of the strong ones and not lonely, I charge you to be a friend. Pick somebody up who has fallen. Warm somebody who needs the warmth of human companionship. Work with someone who is working all alone. Stand with somebody in a fight. And go out and knock on somebody's door who you know is home alone. And when they open the door, be Jesus.